Now those sprinkly things just make things worse, cause it makes them taste better than they did at first, and they're absolutely impossible to resist. Some disappear to who knows where, but I make sure that I get my share, and those kids just stand there waiting for the ones I miss. I sure do like those Christmas cookies.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and happy holidays. Today we celebrate the art of the holiday cookie. Joining me for, I think, the third year in a row.
I think that's right. Mm-hmm.
Is Robin Davis, former food editor for the Columbus Dispatch. She's a James Beard Award-winning food journalist. Now she has her own blog. It's really a great blog. It's called Food, Cook, Eat. We'll have a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. So welcome back, Robin.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
On your blog, you've been writing the 12 days of cookies. You're on day 8, or is it
what's
day?
The day? Today is the 9th, right? So It's day 9. I actually was able to be organized enough that I started it on December 1st. So now I know what cookie I'm on by the date. So yeah, I've been doing a cookie a day, all kinds of different ones, some that are simple, some that are a little bit more complicated, and all that have those great holiday flavors.
I think that's great when, you know, however you do it, you have some simple ones and some complicated ones. Everybody wants to see the more... the festive-y type of stuff, that they don't all have to take that much time.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, I went back and forth. One of the cookies I have on there is a simple chocolate chip bar cookie. So it's really almost like a brownie, but it's the simplest thing you could make. And my sister even said, I think this is, of the hundreds of cookies that you've made over the years, this is the best one. There's just something simple and lovely and homey about it. And they barely lasted long enough for us to take a photograph of them. It was like, gotta eat.
I was talking to the interns last week and asking them what their favorites were, and they were all trying to figure out what you call it, but it's the peanut butter cookie with the big
peanut butter blossoms.
Peanut butter blossoms. And I'm like, I said, that's not a Christmas cookie. But they insist that that's their Christmas cookie, so It's really in the eye of the beholder.
Absolutely. For some people, just a simple chocolate chip cookie, a homemade chocolate chip cookie, is enough for it to be a holiday cookie for them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My guest is Robin Davis. She's the author of I talked with her last spring, I think, about this, The Recipe for Joy, A Stepmom's Story of Finding Faith, Following Love, and Feeding a Family. She now has a food blog called Food, Cook, Eat. And she's with me now to talk about holiday cookies. And we always love to hear from the listeners. You always have great stories out there about Christmas cookies, what they mean to you. Maybe there's a special memory for you. Maybe there's a favorite cookie. Maybe you have a question for Robin. She's definitely knows what she's talking about in the bake shop. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're a trained chef.
I am. I went to the California Culinary Academy, if I can say that, in San Francisco. And one of the things that we had to do was take, I think it was 4 baking and pastry classes. And I was thinking about this yesterday because a little later this week, there's a biscotti recipe that I had to do. This is kind of funny. I had to do a senior final project, right? And that in cooking school was a plated dessert, something you could serve at a restaurant. And so I did strawberry granita with frozen sabayon in between layers, and then I had biscotti as a garnish on that. And I still laugh when I'm listening to my kids talk about their thermodynamic finals, and I'm like, well, when I was in cooking school, I had to do a plated dessert or I had to do a wedding cake. Uh-huh. So yes, I am a professionally trained chef. But mostly a home cook. You know, I've worked in a couple restaurants in San Francisco, but mostly I've been a food writer and definitely a home cook.
The number is 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Want to talk about your favorite Christmas cookie? Want to talk about your favorite Christmas cookie memory? Give us a call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So Was there any rhyme or reason, any method to your madness of which you start, what cookie you started with on your 12 days?
Well, I started with one that is a molasses spice cookie, because for me, I think that those are the ones that have those holiday spices, you know, molasses and cinnamon and lots of ginger. And so those are the ones that make the house smell like the holidays to me. So that's where I started. And they're a nice soft drop cookie, easy to make. Nothing complicated. And that was kind of it. And from there, it was a matter of finding cookies that I loved and recipes I've enjoyed over the years and things that my family really have enjoyed as well.
You included a bonus baking tip, and this is a good one. The if you bake only once a year tip.
Well, it's to buy new leavening. I mean, I don't know how many times I hear from people who say, you know, my cookies didn't rise. And I ask them, when was the last time you bought baking powder? And they don't remember. And even if it has an expiration date that's a couple months away, if you've stored it badly, who
if
knows?
If it's been open for
if
the past 2 years.
Open,
right.
It's not very expensive. I think they're like $1.25. Go ahead and buy them. And then you know for sure. I do that every year in November before Thanksgiving. I throw out what I've got and I buy new. And that way I just know I'm all set.
I pour the baking soda down the garbage disposal
exactly.
And let it sit there
mm-hmm.
for about an hour. And then and or I put it in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Phyllis in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I have a question. I have this recipe for this fresh apple cake. That is to die for. It's very moist. It's got coconut in it, and I threw in some butterscotch chips. And I was thinking that it would make a really, really good cookie.
Hmm. That's...
Except it has vegetable oil in it.
Well, that may not make a huge difference. Here's the problem you're going to run into if you want to turn it in to a cookie. The vegetable oil is liquid, and any other fat that you would use, whether it's shortening or butter, the liquid content's different. So you would definitely have to play around with it. There are some cookie recipes that have vegetable oil in them, but you've got a lot of moisture to work with. So I don't think you could just take the cookie or the cake batter and drop it on, you know, and make little drop cookies. You could certainly make muffins, but you're going to have to start messing with the proportions on it. And one thing that I always tell people is, unlike making spaghetti sauce or anything like that, baking is a formula, first and foremost.
Chemistry.
And so you mess with one ingredient or one proportion. And you may have thrown off things in a different direction. You may not get the results that you want. You might start by looking for a cake or an apple cookie recipe and then comparing the two and seeing what the proportions are and seeing if you can't get those flavors.
That's a great idea. And then just adapting that to bring in what you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Phyllis, thanks a lot. That's a good question. Stacy in Worthington, you're on the air with Robin Davis. Welcome, Stacy.
Hi, thank you very much. I miss you, Robin. You were great at the stats.
Oh, thank you so much.
I am having a problem. I don't know if it's just the trend and I'm getting caught up in it, but I get paralyzed when I go to make cookies anymore, any baked good really, and I don't have the weight for measurements because I have no idea how the cookbook person weighs their flour or measures their flour. And I just don't know what to do.
Do you mean
weights versus measures is what you're talking about? Are your recipes in weight or are they in cups?
No, if they're in weights, it's easy for me. It's when they're in cups that I kind of, because, you know, it makes a big difference if you scoop your flour mm-hmm. or if you spoon your flour.
Right. And that's another of the baking tips that I actually have. And you will definitely get a difference. You're right. Recipes that are tested by people who really know their way around the kitchen are going to use the scoop and level method. They're not going to pack that flour in. So fluff up your flour. Take a dry measuring cup, not a wet measuring cup. There really is a difference in, you know, volume versus that measure. And spoon it into the cup and then use the flat edge of a knife to level it off. And that'll give you a great measure. try not to be afraid in the kitchen. You know, these recipes are tested that way. They're tested by cups and not by weight. It is for sure more exact to do weights, but in this country, we still don't do it for the most part. And so I think you're still going to get good results if it's a recipe developer that you trust or a cookbook you trust.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right. Bye, Stacey. I just load it up, tap it on the mm-hmm. side of the thing mm-hmm. just to kind of shake it up a little bit.
Right.
And then dump it in.
Yeah. Exactly. I do. We have a big Tupperware container. We just dump our bags of flour in there, and then I'll fluff it up with a fork and I'll spoon it in, level it off at the end. They say not to scoop too much because you may pack more in.
Right.
But I think that there is enough flexibility in the kind of home baking that we're all doing that you're going to be okay.
Otherwise, the recipe makers would go out of business very quickly.
That's very true.
If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. So soft molasses spice cookies. Mm-hmm. We've talked about those. Day two. Oh, my goodness. What's this? Oh, this is the chewy chocolate chip cookie bars you mentioned.
Right, right. They're just terrific, and they're easy to make. It's everything that's great about a chocolate chip cookie, except that it happens to be in bar form. So you press it into a pan, you bake it, cool it. That's the hardest part, waiting for them to cool. Take it out, cut it into bars.
Yeah, and this is where you say, when measuring the flour, don't pack it in.
Right, exactly.
How do you make a bar, though, of this with, is it a cross between kind of cakiness and cookiness?
It is. It's a little bit more like a brownie than it is even like a cookie. So it definitely has a nice softness to it. You may not get the crunch that you get from a cookie, depending on the recipe there are thousands mm-hmm. of chocolate chip cookie recipes. So this one is kind of all the great things that I love in a chocolate chip cookie, minus any crunch. So you get a little bit of crunch on top, just a little bit on the top mm-hmm. from where it gets nice and brown. Yeah.
Looks really good. And now you can also just use it to make cookies, right?
You could, absolutely. You could use that as a drop cookie. There'd be no problem with that.
Day three is the cranberry oat cookies. Now, I have my oatmeal holiday cookie, but this looks really great. Cranberry in anything makes it holiday.
It does. It's so bright and festive. The flavor's a little bit different than raisins, traditional raisins. Now, you...
Which I am boozing up right now. I just started soaking them in triple sec last
Your boozy
night.
Raisins may be better than any cranberries, but you could use boozy raisins in this recipe for sure. I like the color of cranberries. You could also throw in white chocolate chips. That's a real natural, giving it a little bit of a wintry look. You could also put in some toasted walnuts if you wanted to. But this is a nice, crispy, chewy recipe, ones that get nice and lacy and thin. I like it a lot. And again, it's one that's just super easy. You know, beat the butter and sugar, fold in everything else. It has a lot of oats, too. So I like to believe it's healthy.
Oh, I love oatmeal cookie. And if you want to not do the chips, if you want to do something different, what I do with mine is, among many other things, is dip them in melted white chocolate. So they kind of have this, I think they're called frost. I don't know. I can't remember the name of them now, but they're like, they look like they're frosted on the edge.
And I think that's beautiful. What a great idea. And then it makes them a little bit dressier, which tends to be what we want during the holidays. You know, this is a great cookie for after school, but dressing them up that way makes them pretty enough that you could serve them at a holiday party or part of a cookie exchange if you wanted to.
I'm talking with Robin Davis. She is a James Beard Award-winning cookbook author, or journalist, I should say. And we're talking now about what she's posted on her blog called "Cook Food, Cook, Eat." It's the 12 days of cookies. We're only on day four, so you haven't missed much. But we'll have a link on our website if you want to go back and look at the recipes. That's at WOSU.org/allsides. We'd love to hear from our listeners. We always love to hear your ideas, your questions, your memories, your favorites. 614-292-8513 or email it at allsides@WOSU.org. Surely it's never the same without the listeners, right, Robin?
Absolutely. You know, that is one thing that I miss so much at the Dispatch is not having the interaction with the readers, and I know you feel the same way about your listeners.
Yep. All that hate mail. Okay, so we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe.
The ones that welcome back. It's our annual holiday cookie show with James Beard Award-winning food journalist Robin Davis. You probably remember her best in Columbus from the Columbus Dispatch. She's not there anymore, but she has a great new blog, Food Cook Eat. Check it out. We have a link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment for Robin, want to share some stories about your Christmas cookie, holiday cookie memories, that's fine too. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Joe from LaRue, Ohio, you want to talk a little bit more about oatmeal cookies?
That's right. I need a sugar-free oatmeal cookie. Splenda is okay, stevia is okay, but sorbitol is a no-no. What can you do for me?
Well, I would recommend that you find a recipe that uses sorbitol. I don't know anything about, but Splenda does a great job replacing baking. But what you need to do is find a recipe that's based on that. You can't, even despite what they say, you can't just replace sugar with Splenda.
Doesn't Splenda have a cookbook?
Splenda does have a cookbook and tons of recipes online. And they have, if you can have any sugar at all, they have a baking blend that's lovely. It's part sugar, part Splenda. If you can't do sugar at all, they definitely have recipes that are specifically done just with Splenda. I think it's the best one for baking because it has the most natural flavor. You just have to be careful proportion-wise. And Splenda also doesn't brown. It doesn't have the sugar qualities that brown. So you need to find something that'll do that. And their recipes are developed exactly that way, and that's why you can't just replace it in recipes like the ones that I have.
Okay. Thank you, Joe, for that call. Judy in Newark, you're on the air. This is a cookie show, but we'll let you on anyway.
Yes, I have a comment about a jam cake recipe that was passed down from my great-grandmother, mm-hmm. and I'm the only person I've ever known to make it. Is that just an old recipe?
Well,
or?
I've seen jam cake recipes in Cooks Illustrated and Country Cooking.
Is it like a coffee cake, or is it layers and then it has jam in between it? Tell me a little bit about it.
Oh, no, it's made with a cup of jam, mm-hmm. and it's made like in an angel food cake cream.
Oh.
And it has a thick consistency like pound cake or something like that, but it's very moist. It's delicious.
Is the jam mixed in, or is it like a swirl?
No, it is mixed in right along with all the other ingredients.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. I can't say I've seen a recipe exactly like that, but it seemed, you know, certainly that would work as part of your sugar, part of your liquid, and I bet it adds, depending on the kind you use, I bet it adds a beautiful color.
Yeah, it really does, and it's just special because it was my great-grandmother's, mm-hmm. although my family goes right for the chocolate, so it's not quite as popular there. But.
I don't know. I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah, it sounds really good. Can you share it with us? Is it possible for them to post it on your Facebook?
Facebook,
yeah.
Sure, but
okay.
Why don't you do that, the All Sides Facebook page? It would be great to see that recipe.
Okay, I'll be glad to.
All right. Thanks a lot,
Thanks.
Judy.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye. Beth in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Beth. You got to turn down the radio.
Okay, hold on.
Okay. All right.
Hi, Ann. Okay. I have a question. My mom is, just to make it a little bit more interesting than the sugar-free guy, she's type 2 diabetes. I can use some sugars like molasses or brown sugar, but she's also gluten sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Help.
What I'm going to recommend, there are a couple recipes, and again, they're things that you need to look for online, but a couple that use chocolate and peanut butter, and then they don't use very much flour. They might use things like oats or rice cereal, and things like that work really, really well. Sometimes they don't have any flour, just a little bit of egg and the peanut butter, but you can find those recipes online. Look for gluten-free, and then take a look for ones that also use Splenda or something along those lines, and you should be able to find them. I know that there are chocolate peanut butter versions that you can find that are really terrific. You know, gluten is another one that's definitely problematic. A lot of people suffer from celiac or gluten sensitivities, and this time of year can be especially difficult. And then I'm also going to preview something a little bit. I have a recipe for a bar, an energy bar, which is really delicious. It's coming out in capital style, and it is also just happens to be gluten-free and uses a little bit of honey, but no sugar, I believe. So take a look for that. I'll see if I can't get my hands on an early copy and post that on Food Cookie, too, for you.
All right, Beth, thanks a lot for the call. Good luck with that. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. It's our annual holiday cookie show. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment or a memory you want to share. Always love the memories. My guest is Robin Davis, former food editor for the Columbus Dispatch, ergo the recent Dispatch reference. She has a blog. It's called Food Cook Eat. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Moving on to day four of your 12 days of cookies is chocolate.
It's lots of chocolate.
Chocolate cherry. What a, that one of a wonderful combination.
That one, I mean, for some people, as people have said, who've called in today, chocolate is the big deal for them. So this is a triple chocolate cookie. It uses unsweetened cocoa powder, bittersweet chocolate that's melted, and then also semi-sweet chocolate chips. And then I throw in the dried cherries just to give it a little bit of balance with flavor. It gives you something sweet tart. I use the tart dried cherries. So it's kind of a black forest flavor. I also like what the dried cherries do, giving it a little bit of texture. But it's a big, chewy mouthful of chocolate, and it's delicious for chocolate lovers. Mm-hmm. Really a great cookie. And again, easy to make. Something that's easy. And it's a little bit different. You melt the butter and melt the chocolate with it, so you're not beating the butter in like you do with most recipes. And I think that that helps with the nice, chewy texture that they have.
Bonus baking tip here is eggs. Now, this is really great to know. Use large unless recipe specifies otherwise.
Right. I know some people will buy whatever's on sale or use any size eggs from medium to the extra large. The problem is eggs have different sizes because of a different volume of liquid. The vast majority of recipes are developed using large eggs. So if you're using extra large eggs or you're using medium size eggs, you're going to have a little bit of a different volume. So I just tell people, buy the large eggs and use those for your baking. It's going to be your best bet, unless the recipe calls for something different. That's my recommendation. And there are, you can find them online that'll tell you the exact volume sizes, but my math isn't always that great, so I can't always do the calculations for you on making that translation from a small egg or a medium egg to an extra large
egg. Math bad. Okay. We have an email from Barb. How do you replace all-purpose with white?
White whole wheat flour?
Yeah.
White whole wheat flour is a flour
that kind of threw me off for a second. White whole wheat,
and that is a product that's very popular. White whole wheat flour is made. First of all purpose flour is also a wheat flour, but it's made with a soft summer wheat. White whole wheat flour is one that's a whole wheat flour made with a harder winter wheat. The difference is one of them has more flour. Start with any recipe; they're not a one for one translation again, because you're going the white whole wheat flour is going to absorb more liquid, just like a regular whole wheat flour would. So I always say start with about half the amount and go from there. So if you have a chocolate chip cookie recipe that calls for 2 cups of flour, start with 1 cup of the white whole wheat, 1 cup of all-purpose, and then start working it to a point that that it's a taste that you like and a consistency that you like. My brother over Thanksgiving used regular whole wheat, you know, the dark whole wheat flour for his favorite cookie recipe. And boy, nice flavor, but they were gritty, and that's what whole wheat flour will do to you. I'm sure they were healthy. Unfortunately, they tasted healthy, and so and not necessarily
healthy
what
bad.
You're looking for. So, yeah, with your white whole wheat, start it at about half the amount and go from there.
Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Steve.
Yes, there's a German pastry. It's a seasonal Oblaten. It's like a pizelle. Do you know anyone that sells Oblaten in Columbus?
I don't, off the top of my head, and I have to say that that isn't one that I've heard of before. You say it's like a pizzelle?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Pizzelle?
Yeah.
Steve, did you say a pizzelle? Oh, I guess we lost him. I think he said pizzelle.
And that's not one that I know. What's the name of the bakery? We do this every year.
I think they closed it.
They may have.
In German Village,
yeah. So I'm not exactly sure where you might go. You might talk to the people at Schmidt's, and they might know, or they might import it. Maybe that's a good place to start.
World Market has a lot of paste or, you know, baked things from around the world that, of course, are packaged somewhere else. And
that's a great suggestion. That could be a good place to start, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Email from Bob in Columbus. He says, I really like the cornflake marshmallow wreath cookies with cinnamon imperials as berry decorations, but sometimes the cinnamon imperials get tooth-breakingly hard even when they're brand new. Does Robin have any tips for keeping them relatively soft?
Well, now that's a good question. I don't.
You could use cranberries.
You could use, actually, dried cranberries.
Or dried cherries.
And I agree. Sometimes those imperials do get a little, you know, tooth-breakingly hard. And that's not good. You know, you need to keep the package, obviously, if you're using it from year to year, keep that package sealed up. It's another candy that's not very expensive, so it doesn't hurt you to buy a fresh one. And the other thing you could do, if you don't mind the work, you could buy red gumdrops or Swedish fish and cut them into pieces, and that would give you the red color, and those might stay a little softer for you.
Okay. Now, we definitely have a chocolate theme going on here because
we're heavy on chocolate.
We're at a day five, and it's chocolate. We've gone from chocolate pecan bars.
Right.
These look really good. And are these like Tassies?
They're not like Tassies. It's a cookie crust, and it's almost like a pecan pie on top.
Ooh.
And so it's pecans, toasted pecans, and chocolate chips, and then a beaten butter, sugar, and a little bit of flour mixture. So you pour it over the top, and it kind of sets up the way a pecan pie does. So it's kind of candy-like, maybe not as soft as a pie. Really delicious, and you need to eat them in small pieces because they are really, really rich. Lots and lots of butter in that one as well. Probably as much as chocolate, I like butter. So you'll find lots of that in my recipes.
That's the first thing I do when I start finding it on sale is buy a lot of it and put it in the freezer.
Exactly.
Unsalted butter is your best bet for baking, of course. But it's not just because of the salt. It has less water.
It is a two-pronged thing. There is a salt content, and different brands will have different amounts of salt. So you won't get consistency on that. But there is also more water that is in salted butter.
Because it retains.
Yeah, it'll retain more water, where you will get less of the water and in the unsalted butter. So I think you get a more true butter flavor, and you also get chemically a better reaction that way than using the salted butter. Now, if all you have is salted butter and you don't want to go buy it, by all means use it. Your results just might be a little bit different, though. For me, and I'm the wackadoodle who does this, I only have unsalted butter, so when I put it on my toast, I then sprinkle my toast with salt. So that's a little weird, but that's what I do, and I only use unsalted butter in my house. That's the only kind I use.
That's the only kind I use, too, but I skip the salt.
You don't put salt on
your... I love unsalted, too.
Well, I like the way it tastes, but I do like a good crunch of salt, and that's, you know, I know that's a little bizarre. I'm putting sea salt on toast.
I don't know. When we were talking about schmaltz a month ago or so, people were saying that they used to like to put schmaltz on dark rye, and then they'd salt it. Mm-hmm. A couple different people either emailed us or called in. So there's this tradition of salting things like that.
There is, absolutely. And I think we just like that flavor, that little pop of salty flavor on things.
Oh, yay. Someone's calling in about a bourbon ball. Hi, James and Hilliard. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. My sister and I tried to recreate my mother's recipe over Thanksgiving, and it was just a real disaster. The way we read it, it took 4 cups of sugar with only 1 stick of butter, and it turned out to be just a granular sugar ball that never did. So what is the proper proportions of butter to sugar For make them like a butterball.
Like a butterball? I can't tell you off the top of my head. How much flour was in that mixture, though?
None. There
Oh, wow.
Bourbon balls, only sugar, butter, pecans, and bourbon.
No, you
there's
got to
be some flour.
Flour or
she
something.
She left something out, James.
No, I just looked online, and that's
really?
Almost always you'll find something, even if it's like Nilla wafers, you know, crushed stuff, or, but certainly, you know, 4 cups of sugar and 1 cup of bourbon without anything else to hold it together, that's never, I mean, I can't even imagine what the amount of nuts would be that would have to hold that together.
And how crushed they'd have to
be. Yeah, because they're really going to, you need something, you know, making a cookie is not unlike building a house. You know, you got to have your bricks, you got to have your mortar. And so you're kind of mixing the bricks and you have lots of mortar. So that's kind of what the issue there is. Gosh, off the top of my head, I don't have a recipe. Let me see if I can find one. And if I can, I'll post that on Anne's Facebook page because I know that there are lots and lots of recipes out there, bourbon balls that work. And if any listeners out there have one or have a proportion, call us and let us know.
James, you said that you're trying to recreate your mother's bourbon balls. Your mother's passed, I imagine, right?
Yeah. You know, the handwritten recipe.
That, right.
You know, she left us, and now she's gone, and it was crazy. But actually, if I look at the Kentucky Derby Museum sites, it's just one stick of butter, one box of powdered sugar, a cup of chopped pecans, and 4 tablespoons of bourbon. That's it.
Are you using powdered sugar?
Well, we didn't, but they are.
There's the secret there. Powdered sugar has, confectioner sugar has talc in it, and so that's something that's actually working as what I was calling your bricks there. That's kind of working as a flour. It's something that's a thickener, and it keeps the powdered sugar from sticking together. So you might swap that out because that's working as something that's thickening it and allowing it to hold together much better than granulated sugar will, because granulated sugar, all it's doing is dissolving into your butter, and so there's no glue there. There's nothing to hold that together. So try it with the powdered sugar. What's the recipe that your mother had? What were the notes? And I'm guessing that's pretty much all it was just notes on a card or a piece of paper.
Yeah, it was just those ingredients. She said sugar and. Maybe she used powdered sugar.
She may well have. Yeah, that's my guess. You might try the same thing. And you also might try it in half amount so that you don't feel like if it doesn't work that you've used
wasted
quite so
all
much.
That good bourbon.
Yeah. All that good bourbon. Because it is the bourbon we miss the
but
most.
But keep trying, James. You don't want to give up that tradition.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
I sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our annual holiday cooking show with Robin Davis, former food editor for the Columbus Dispatch. We are going from her blog today, Food Cook Eat, for lots of ideas on cookies. She's up to day 9 of her 12 Days of Cookies project. If you have a question or comment, want to share a memory about a special cookie, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Lots of people have memories. James just called in. They're trying to recreate the bourbon balls of yesteryear that their mother had, and I think she left something out of the recipe, James.
And sometimes that happens.
They know what it is.
Exactly. I think we're lucky at all to have written recipes, and it's something that I've been trying to do more with my kids and encourage people to do. Get people in the kitchen with you so that they learn the recipes. There's also been a movement for people to work with their parents and grandparents and take videos of them cooking so that you have that, and you have that for the rest of your life, that then you'll have that documented how they make it. Because a lot of times if you ask someone for a written recipe, something gets left out.
Well, I remember I think I was in junior high or high school, but way past the age of my grandma thinking I ever wanted to be around her. And I asked her to show me how she made her cutout cookies because mm-hmm. they were so much better than what my mom did.
Right.
And she was incredibly flattered and had me over for this huge production. But I learned mm-hmm. how she makes her cookies.
And you make them the same way now, don't you?
I do.
You?
Yeah. I do. I make them the same way now. I know what the tricks are. Right. And it really meant a lot to do that.
Right.
And she was amazed that I wanted to, but, you know.
Yeah, I can't.
I'll do anything for a good cookie. You can spend a whole night.
Holding with your grandma.
On day 6 of the 12 Days of Cookies, we're talking about holiday jam thumbprints. I love this recipe. Tell us about it.
Well, this one's a little bit different. I use a little bit of cream cheese in the dough. That's nothing necessarily new. But the other thing, it's a Cook's Illustrated magazine technique. You make the balls, and then you make the little thumbprint in them, put them in the oven, but just half the baking time. Then take them out and use a spoon to re-indent all the balls again so that you have that nice.
By now they've inflated a little bit.
They do. And then the other thing is you don't put the jam in until that point. One of my biggest complaints, and a lot of people, the jam oozes out or it just tastes too cooked and it doesn't taste very good. It gets very hard. So this really keeps the jam flavor nice and true. The texture is beautiful. It's an extra step. So I understand maybe some people don't want to do that, but I think it works beautifully and it certainly makes a really gorgeous cookie.
I can't wait to try it. Because that's one of my favorites, mm-hmm. But I do have the problem. It's when the jam oozes out, then it gets thinned out, yeah. And then it cooks, but it's not as, when you're biting into the cookie, you're biting through the jam, and it mm-hmm. shouldn't be that way.
No. And in fact, you should really make these about the size that they're just one bite. The
exactly.
whole thing goes in your mouth. If they're too big for that, then they're just too big.
And the jam shouldn't be chewy.
It shouldn't.
Erla and Galloway, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Erla.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hey, I just had a couple of tips, and your chef or you may have talked about this before, but just in case, there was a lady that was looking for gluten-free flour for her mother,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure you know about this company, but I don't know if everyone does. It's called the King Arthur Flour Company,
mm-hmm.
and they do sell in stores, but they have a wide variety, maybe five or six or more types of gluten-free flour in their catalog online. So she could actually take her pick, in a way, of gluten-free flour. You just have to get online, order it, and pay for shipping. But, you know, if you have an allergy like that, that might be helpful to mm-hmm. someone.
That's a very good point. And there is one other one called Cup for Cup, C-U-P, the number four cup, C-U-P. And that's available. It's an expensive flour, but it's one that does work directly cup for cup for the flours. And it's a little bit expensive, but worth it. So, yeah, those are all great suggestions.
And, well, thank you, and I'll write that down, too, for myself. And the other thing was, maybe you've discussed this, too, but my aunt was a school cook, and she always told me, be careful, do not use beet sugar in your baking. Is that correct?
How the heck do you know if it's beet sugar?
Here's how
this
you know.
This is interesting,
Erla. This is a very good point. Look on your sugar packages, your granulated sugar, and if it doesn't say pure cane sugar, it may not be. And you make a very good point. It will cook completely differently. Cane sugar is marked as cane sugar, and there are some store brands that are not, and they're made from beet, and the reaction's different. I haven't had huge problems with cookies, but I have if you make any kind of candy, you will run into some serious problems, and you'll think it's your fault until about the fifth time that you do it, and you realize, no, it's not me. I'm so, yeah, that's a very good
point.
Would
it be some of the less expensive brands mm-hmm. tend to
yeah.
be beet sugar?
Yes,
okay.
That's exactly it.
Right.
So it's really worth buying for your holiday baking. Look for the sugar that does say pure cane sugar on it.
Erla,
very
thank
good
you
point.
So much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Happy holidays.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, another, your bonus baking tip along with your holiday jam thumbprints is a really good one.
Which one is that?
It's the don't start a recipe until you've read it through completely.
Oh, my gosh. That's true. And I know it's basic. And we all read that and say, yeah, yeah, yeah. But how many, and I would have to raise my hand of that, how many times have you gotten to a point in a recipe and you're like, oh, I don't have. And sometimes it's something really basic, like you don't have the flour or the eggs.
Right. Or you think you do because I bake so much.
Right.
And I don't realize how low I am on flour.
Exactly. Or, you know, I have kids who come home from college, so I'm often out of ingredients that I had the night before. I really can't say it enough. And also make sure you have the pan size, make sure you understand the ingredients. Really getting through the whole recipe is important. Yeah.
Christy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, this is Christy.
Hi.
How are you, Ann and Robin?
Hi.
Hi. My question deals with white chocolate. Mm. I just recently melted some to make peppermint bark. And I got to confess, the white chocolate was from last year because I never use it except once a year.
Right.
And it was very, it wasn't smooth when it melted. Is there something that I can add to it to freshen it up to make it be a lot smoother to add to the chocolate? Or should I just throw it away and get fresh?
I don't know if there's anything that you can add to it. The problem with white chocolate, the better the brand, the better it's going to be. But it could be, too, that you've heated it a little too high. White chocolate is extremely temperamental. It melts at a low temperature, doesn't like to be overheated. You could try, instead of throwing it out, and you could certainly use it for white chocolate chips. It would be just fine. But you could try adding a little bit of heated cream. That kind of makes the process a little bit gentle.
When I use the white chocolate for my whatever they are,
they
say I add a little bit of vegetable oil.
And vegetable oil is a good idea, too, because there is no cocoa butter or there are no cocoa solids in it. And so the vegetable oil will be OK. Does that work for you? Do you do that with your oatmeal cookies?
Yes, I do. I add a little bit of oil and then it helps it dry. Sometimes when it because this is on the outside, it's not on the inside. Mm-hmm. So I need to have it dry up. And
right.
so that it's, I don't know why I say harden, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And I think that helps it harden.
Yeah, I think the vegetable oil is a good idea because it would work just fine. The other thing is just keep the temperature really low. Mm-hmm. I have a chocolate peppermint cookie and I melted chocolate chips, but I did it in the microwave and I did it at 50% power for, 20, 30 second increments at a time. White chocolate is incredibly temperimental.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks for the advice.
Sure.
All right, Christy, thanks for the call.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. We have just not very many, about 9 minutes left, but we can still squeeze in a few phone calls if you have a question or comment and you've been waiting. Don't wait anymore. 614-292-8513. We have emails, one from Terry. He or she writes, I have a recipe from the 50s that includes baker's ammonia. In what is basically an iced anise sugar cookie.
Mm-hmm.
These were special to me as they were available one time a year in my youth. I had queried a baker, but he was unable to source it or provide the conversion to anise extract. So your help is appreciated. So
is it the anise extract you're looking for or
they
the
don't
baker's
say.
Ammonia?
So can you answer, what is baker's ammonia?
Well, baker's ammonia
I have
is,
that question.
Right, and that is something that you can get at specialty stores. I think, in fact, you could get it at Sur La Table or Williams-Sonoma.
Okay.
I think you could get it.
What
and
is
it does.
It?
It's exactly that. It's your chemical reactor, and it provides, and gosh, off the top of my head, I'm not remembering exactly what it does because it's so unusual to use it, but it provides, I think, your leavening, and then it also gives it a very particular flavor. Now, anise extract, I do know you can find even at some craft stores. Like you can find it at Michael's or Joann's. Huh. A lot of times you'll find it there. But the baker's ammonia isn't something that you generally want to replace, so you want to find that. And you know what? I bet King Arthur, somebody, one of your other listeners mentioned King Arthur, and they have a lot of baking things, and that would be one of the places you could go for that as well.
Okay, an email from Jessica. Any tips for shipping cookies across the miles? I like to use a decorative Christmas tin. I try to keep cookies packed separately from the moist ones. Strong flavors separate from the chocolate cookies to keep the flavors distinct. Does the popcorn trick work to absorb moisture? P.S. My favorite holiday cookie is date pinwheels.
Oh, date pinwheels are always one that's really popular. You're doing all the right things with your shipping cookies because you do want to keep your flavor separate and your crisp versus your moist cookies. Otherwise, they all end up in between. The other thing that you can do, I've never actually packed them in popcorn. Make sure that you don't pack too many, don't have too many layers in them, and make sure you've got a little bit of air around it. Put it in, plastic zip-top bags, and then put it in your decorative tin. And if it's you want it in there, but you don't want it to be packed so tight that they break. So leave a little bit of air, and if you put a layer of popcorn in it, then I think that does help. And it can also be the styrofoam, the non-environmentally friendly styrofoam
or the
popcorn,
environmentally friendly
environmentally friendly popcorn. Yeah. And we're talking popped popcorn, not the popcorn seeds. Those wouldn't
right.
work as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Email from Jim. I think he's responding to the questioner who called about the item German pastry,
right,
like Pizzelles. Mm-hmm. And he said 4 Pizzelles. You can find these at Audino's in Hilliard. Call ahead. I believe Audino's on 11th carries these as well. So that's for Pizzelles, though. PIZZELLES. Mary in Columbus with the universal question. Go ahead, Mary.
I have a question about chocolate chip cookies, and I always use the recipe right off the chocolate chip bag, and I always think I'm doing the same thing, but they don't always turn out the same. I like mine to be flat and to spread out, but sometimes they kind of stay in a ball, a clump, and they don't spread out, and the only thing I can think of is maybe it's how soft my butter is.
It's one of two things. It's how soft your butter is. The softer the butter is, the flatter your cookie will be. When you want that kind of in between, it is one of my bonus baking tips to let the butter sit out for about 30 minutes and no more. But if you want your cookie a little thinner, let it sit out for about an hour. The other thing may be how you're measuring flour, which Anna and I talked about a little bit the earlier part of the hour. If you pack in the flour, you're putting more flour in, then it's they're going to be more cakey. And if you really measure that flour carefully, then they'll have a chance to spread out. The more flour, the thicker the cookie.
Okay, Mary, thanks a lot for that call. Email from Georgia. You'll get a kick out of it. When I transcribed a bunch of my grandmother's recipes after her death years ago, I discovered that for any recipe she had which involved flour, no quantity was specified. In fact, sometimes the flour wasn't even listed at all, and one had to infer the necessity for it. Apparently, she felt this was too obvious to be listed and that any moron would know that you add flour until it looks right. Which
that may be our bourbon ball question.
It may be the bourbon ball issue, although I think the powdered sugar is a really interesting idea. But yeah, I've saved all my grandmother's recipes. I have not transcribed them. Jolly good for you, Georgia. But there are strange things like that in them.
And salt as well. A lot of times people won't say season it with salt, but of course you would,
Julie in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. So my mom makes a very traditional Arabic butter cookie called ghareba, and it only has 4 ingredients: clarified butter, flour, sugar, and then she'll oftentimes just add for decoration a pistachio on the top of it. I find them boring, but every Arab she's ever fed them to declares them the best they've ever had. What I'd like to do is kind of dress them up for Christmas and make them a little more interesting to the Western palate. Any suggestions?
Well, I think there's all kinds of spices that you could put in that would make it really interesting. A little bit of cardamom could be interesting if you don't mind spending the money for it. That's where I would go first. Maybe a little ginger, a little cloves, and you could also go a different direction. Try some orange peel, some lemon peel.
Nice.
In fact, the orange peel and the cardamom would be great. But remember what you're dealing with, too, is a taste memory. And so when the people are eating them, that's what they're eating. And so the people who've always eaten it the boring way may not like the new way very much.
We'll see what happens.
Okay,
right, good luck
with that.
Thank you.
An email from Camille in Hilliard, and then we're just about running out of time. She says, my question for your guest is about the origin of the name of Mexican wedding cookies. I've also heard them called Russian tea cakes, mm-hmm. which is what I've heard them called, and snowball cookies. My mother-in-law calls them butternut balls, which I think is just an appetizer. What is the true origin of these cookies?
Oh, now that I would have to look up for you. I will tell you that my family called them butterballs. That's what they were. My grandmother brought them every year, but it's all the same cookie, Mexican wedding cookies, Russian tea cakes. I can't tell you off the top of my head, but I'll see if I can look it up and post it on Ann's Facebook.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that they come from different cultures. But
exactly.
Robin Davis, thank you so much.
My pleasure to be here.
Don't forget, Food Cook Eat is the name of her blog. Go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides for a link to that. And check out our Facebook page. We've got some recipes coming. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The ones that look like Santa Claus, Christmas trees and bells and stars.